5 years ago, a new church began in the center of downtown San Diego, committed to making God's love impossible to ignore. We set out to build a faith community where everyone's welcome, nobody's perfect, and anything's possible. And what has happened since is nothing short of miraculous. We have seen broken people mended, dead-end marriages brought back to life, and lost people found. And all of it has happened under the canopy of God's amazing grace in us and through us. He is the reason we are set free. He is the reason we can discover our purpose and live lives that make a difference. And now, a new chapter is beginning. Now, a new and exciting leg of the adventure begins. Now is the time to step toward a permanent home for Center Church. Now we take new steps on the Jesus adventure. It's time to go all in. He is calling us as a people to be mission-centered and multiplication-minded, believing that while we have seen God do so much already, there is more. More impact to be made, more chains to be broken, more hope to be amplified, more lives to be transformed by real relationship with Christ. Our central purpose remains the same today as the day we began in the little backyard in South Park. Christ at the center of me, and me at the center of his city. I want something just like this. And the exciting opportunity is still available to you. I want something just like this. To go all in and make the love of God impossible to ignore here in San Diego and all around the world. And it starts with one breathtaking leap and two faith-filled words. All in.
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to Center Church. My name is Marcus. I'm the lead pastor here. And I'm excited that it's fall. It's starting to cool off a little bit. And how many people have gone through the process so far? If you've got maybe kids like mine and you've done the pumpkin patch thing or you're carving pumpkins at some level, okay, there's a few hands. Some of you people really need to get on it, okay? Because we believe in overachieving as parents, and so we want to definitely get in the flow there. But we actually carved pumpkins at my house last night for the first time, and when I was watching that little trailer about All In, I just want to kind of describe for you what it means for me when I go pumpkin carving, because I go all in, baby. I don't just, like, you know, cut it with a knife and, you know, like a couple of triangles and call it good. We busted out the power tools at my house, okay? We go straight up like Dremel, and we're carving, we're, you know, there's particles flying, but that's just kind of like what it's like, and that's part of what makes it fun at our place, is we just kind of go all in, and that's what this series is kind of all about, is where we are, and where God wants us to be, and how we go absolutely head first and headlong into that place. That's what All In is really all about. Well, in 1857, U.S. Navy Commander William Lewis Herndon died. He actually went down with his ship. It was the USS Central America, and it went down in this massive hurricane. And but you know, it's like it was 1857. It's been a long time. You probably never even heard of Navy Commander Herndon. But it turns out that there was a monument that was built in honor of the sacrifice of he and his men. It's called now the Herndon Monument, and it sits on the campus of the Naval Academy in Annapolis, Maryland. And what it basically is a 21-foot obelisk that is a commemoration of that moment in naval history. But in 1940, something kind of interesting happened, because Academy freshmen on the campus of the Naval Academy, they're known as plebes. The freshman class in 1940 began to do something and started a tradition that continues to this day. And in celebration of their graduation from being a freshman and becoming an upperclassman, they begin to get together as a class and climb the Herndon Monument. The 21-foot obelisk, they all get together and they do it. And it's kind of a big tradition now. And what they basically would do is they would, there's a freshman, it's called a Dixie Cup. It's like a little cap that Navy Academy plebes wear. And what they would do is they would put a cap on the top of the monument. And then the whole goal of the entire class is to work together to climb to the top of the monument, remove the freshman plebe cap, and put an officer's cap on top of it, an upperclassman's hat on top of it. But here's the catch, because it's not as easy as you might think, even with hundreds and hundreds of young warriors trying to get it accomplished. Here's the thing. The plebes are not allowed any props to get to the top of the 21 feet. Can't have a ladder, can't rope it, can't do anything else. All you can use is the clothes on your back. Now, sounds easy enough. The catch is that they grease it down from top to bottom so it is completely slippery and crazy. And then while they go to try to start climbing it, the upperclassmen hose them down with water hoses while it's all happening. So everybody's wet, everybody's greasy, and they try to climb to the top. And so what happens, I'm gonna actually show you what this looks like in just a second, but it's for hundreds of people come together. Hundreds of young warriors all gather together like they're on one team to accomplish one central purpose. And the Herndon Climb has basically come to represent this master test of perseverance and teamwork and endurance that's taught in a cadet's first year. I want you to watch this.
Continuing the tradition is pretty cool. It's interesting to see how it's so consistent if you average out like all the years that they've been doing it. Because you'd think that, oh, you can learn from previous classes, but every class, it's a bonding experience.
It is a culmination of everything that we've learned at the Academy. There's teamwork, there's people taking command, there's following directions, there's looking out for your shipmates. Like, it doesn't seem like it. It seems like we're all fighting in there, but no, we're looking out for each other. We're all A-type personalities. I mean, that's how we got into the Academy. We all want to be the man on top. When you try to be that person that gets up there and then you fall, and not the person that's falling, it's the people underneath because their heads get like smashed to the side and they're like, I want to keep going up. You're like, no, you need to come down. And they're like trying to step on you and they'll step on your nose or just feet in the wrong places. It is a lot of teamwork in some sorts. Like when someone falls, they're not going to get trampled to death. We make sure we clear them out. Like we look out for our shipmates. And like we're helping people up. Like there are some people, like I have never tried to climb. I am not a climber, I'm a rugby player, I am not graceful. And just some people know they gotta be the baseman. So it's a distribute of like who has what job. Everyone's having a good time, even though we're sweating, we're getting our faces stepped on, someone's bleeding, but it's the Naval Academy.
Now, legend has it that the plebe who is able to get to the top and remove the cap and be the first to set an officer's cap on top is the first one, by legend, to become an admiral in that class. They're all for one. You notice how they all are working together and they're all linked arms in there? Today we're going to be talking about what it means to go all in as a person, but maybe even more than all in as a person, what it looks like when those people who have gone all in go together in a unit as a people. And I want to begin with what is really a foundational verse around here for us at Center Church. It's found in Deuteronomy 6:5. It's on the screens if you want to take a look at it. It says, love God, your God, with your whole heart. Love him with all that's in you. Love him with all you've got. There is something very powerful that happens when a person decides to go all in their love for God. But like the Herndon Climb, there's this radical impact that takes place when an individual makes that decision, but then those commitments all come together and lock arms with other people in a community of faith decision, and incredible things happen. That's what Jesus called his church. So when we come together as a community, big things can happen. And I want to look today at a pretty radical faith step. It may be arguably the greatest faith step in the pages of the Bible. It was taken by a person who was far from perfect, but he was also utterly unwilling to allow any obstacle to stand in his way in the pursuit of Jesus, and his name was Peter. And if you turn to page 14 in your booklet, we're going to kind of follow along here. And there's a passage of scripture there in Matthew 14 that I want to read for us today that kind of set the stage of what happened in this story. It says, "Meanwhile, the disciples were in trouble far away from land, for a strong wind had arisen and they were fighting heavy waves. About 3:00 in the morning, Jesus came toward them walking on the water." Don't let that one like slip past you. Jesus is walking on the water in the middle of a storm. Okay, just there we go. We continue. It says, "When the disciples saw him walking on the water, they were terrified. In their fear, they cried out, 'It's a ghost.' But Jesus spoke to them at once. 'Don't be afraid,' he said. 'Take courage. I am here.' Then Peter called to him, 'Lord, if it's really you, tell me to come to you walking on the water.' 'Yes, come,' Jesus said. So Peter went over the side of the boat and walked on the water toward Jesus. But when he saw the strong wind and the waves, he was terrified and he began to sink. 'Save me, Lord,' he shouted. And Jesus immediately reached out and grabbed him. 'You have so little faith,' Jesus said. 'Why did you doubt me?' And when they climbed back into the boat, the wind stopped. Then the disciples worshiped him. 'You really are the Son of God,' they exclaimed." It's a pretty amazing story. And I've been around church quite a while, and I've heard lots of different perspectives and takeaways from this very famous, really miracle that Jesus did with Peter. Lots of different takeaways. Most, if not all of them, oftentimes focus on the part of the story where Peter gets freaked out. He sort of sees the wind and the waves, and he starts sinking, and he becomes overwhelmed, and Jesus reaches out and saves him. And that's an important part of the story for sure. But what I'd like to go ahead and like acknowledge kind of up front is not what Peter didn't do or wasn't able to do, but can we just kind of like put it on the table that he was the only one to actually walk on water? He actually did something that was pretty remarkable. He was ready and willing to get out of a perfectly sound boat in the middle of a raging storm, no less, okay? He's not wakeboarding when the sun is out. The wind is crazy, the waves are going nuts, and he gets out of that boat, a perfectly sound boat, just at the invitation of Jesus. He just says, "Yes, come." And I want you to notice from the story that we're reading is that we're not reading about this story in a book that Peter wrote. This isn't in 1 Peter or 2 Peter, okay? The book, we just read this story out of the book of Matthew. What that means is that this story was being recorded by one of the eyewitnesses that remained in the boat. Matthew's back there just jotting down notes like crazy, like, OMG, can't believe he just did this. Peter's not taking notes. Peter's in action. Peter's piling over the side. Peter wasn't documenting what somebody else did. He was actually living it out loud himself. And so while Peter did falter a bit in his faith, Peter did sink, Peter did need Jesus to grab a hold of him, he was actually the only one that was out there walking on the water with Jesus too. And Peter wasn't a fatality in the story. In fact, one could argue that the closer that he got to Jesus, the safer he became. I really think that that's huge. He walked on water, and then by the time he did start to sink, he's within arm's reach of Jesus. And it says Jesus immediately reached out and grabbed him. So perhaps the safest dude in the entire story is the dude that was sinking in the middle of the water. He was the one that was in closest proximity to Jesus, and Jesus did what Jesus always does. And so I believe that God is still looking for people who will be radical enough to leave the safety of the boat and the security of all the things that are known to jump out in radical faith. And that can be really hard to do because there's storms out there. And the wind starts blowing, like in an unexpected way. It gets scary. And sometimes, kind of like the Herndon Monument, it feels like the obstacles that stand in my way, somebody went and slathered slippery stuff on it when I wasn't looking and made the task even more impossible than it was before. But this is the all-in faith journey that you and I have been called to together. You haven't been called to scale a Herndon Monument by yourself. We have been put together as the church, not as lone rangers, not as people who go it alone, but as committed people who link arms together and who endeavor to live out the purposes that God has for us as a team. We've been really called and empowered by God to go in all for one and one for all. And so I want to dig into this story a little bit more. And I think challenge us as a church to in a new season that we're walking into. You might have gathered, it's called All In. Okay, and let me just kind of give you the brief synopsis. Here is our goal. Our number one goal is that 100% of our church would engage in the area of a faith step, in a generosity step, that across the board, everybody would get in. At whatever level, at whatever part you play, whether you're locking arms with somebody at the base or whether you're wearing the cap and you're scaling the crowd, whether you're the one wiping off the grease from the obelisk or whatever, or whether you're just the person that's just in there rooting everybody on saying, come on, here's a handhold and let's do it. We do it together. And my primary desire is that we would all of us get in on what it actually means to be touched by Jesus in the middle of an all-in commitment. Peter was the only one that got to experience that. But it's a radical, radical gift that God gives to us, an opportunity that he gives to us. And then over the course of the next 2 years, we're believing God together for a $2 million of financial resources to be able to make an even greater impact as a church for the global glory of God. But before we talk more about what all of us are going to do, I want you to consider the steps that need to be taken by one person, and that's you. Let's just talk about you. It's just us, you and me. What does that look like for you? Today, I actually feel like we have a choice. Am I going to be the person that remains in the place of the known, and I take notes? I become the historian of what other people did, or will I be the person who goes scrambling over the side of the boat myself to really take hold of this gift that God has for me? Am I going to write about it from the boat, or is God calling me out upon the water? And I really, this may be the seminal moment in our church up to this point in time. January will be the 5-year anniversary of us celebrating and gathering together in weekly services together. And over the course of that 5-year period of time, I cannot think of a more strategic and important moment than this moment right now for us as a church. And I want you to ask yourself this question. If you're taking notes on page 14 or on the app, here's number one. Ask whether God is calling you out of your comfort zone. Ask whether God might be calling you out of your comfort zone. Verse 27, again, it says, but Jesus spoke to them at once. Don't be afraid, he said. Take courage. I am here. Would you underline that little line? I am here. Then Peter called him, Lord, if it's really you, tell me to come to you walking on the water. Now, why I think it's really important that we kind of grab onto something very essential here is that Peter's not operating in courage just for courage's sake. Okay? That's kind of like sort of the maybe a prevailing cultural attitude or idea or meme that's out there is, hey man, just be courageous. Peter's not being courageous just for courage's sake. Because courage, just for courage's sake, doesn't actually do a whole bunch other than maybe make you feel a particular way for a moment or two. Peter's actually being called out because God's there. He's stepping out because Jesus said, I'm here. And God is in their midst. And so there's this, God, if it's really you, tell me to come to you walking on the water. Now, one of the things that really kind of jumps out at me is that Jesus is already out on the water. He's taking a stroll in the storm. Doesn't that seem odd to you? Sometimes I read these stories and they kind of come across as this very matter of fact. So anyway, Jesus is out walking on the water in the storm. And then there's some other stuff that happened. And I'm like, whoa, can we back that up just a second? Because Jesus is like out walking on the water in the middle of this massive storm. What is the significance of that? Why would he do something like that? And the scripture doesn't tell us exactly what his motivations were, but I think one of the things that we can see from the passage is that Jesus seems perfectly at ease walking in the middle of the storm. He's not nervous about it. He didn't have an umbrella out. He's not like wobbling along. Jesus is just walking in the middle of the storm. He's as comfortable walking in the water in the storm as he is walking in the water when it's fair and sunny outside. Now, why is that significant? It's significant because he's the one that made the weather. He's not influenced by his own weather. You know what I'm saying? He's just out there doing his thing. And so here's what I want you to grasp. While God sometimes calls us out of our comfort zone, he's never outside his comfort zone. It's like, come on out. And that's a real step out of Peter's comfort zone. He's stepping right into Jesus' wheelhouse. Like, I'm good. Sunshine, rain, doesn't really matter because I made the weather. He's got it. And so what we see time and time again in the pages of the scripture, we see examples of people whose next right faith step was a step outside of their status quo. It was a step outside of what was normal and into an all-in commitment to Jesus. And I believe that's what God's calling us as a church in right now. And so I've got kind of a big announcement for you about what's happening for us next as a church. This past week was really a very big week for us. I, along with the Board of Elders at Center Church, we have been in final negotiations this past week to secure a new home for Center Church. And I can tell you that beginning on Christmas Eve, December 23rd, we are going to be moving as a church to a new location. Yes, it's big. It's big. It's a new location on Christmas Eve, December 23rd. We're going to be moving less than 3 miles from here to a place in Bankers Hill. It's 2 blocks off Balboa Park. If you attended the recent women's event, how many of you ladies went to the women's event? All right, good. Raise your hand if you went to the recent Vision and Worship Night. Okay, that's the place. That's the place. That's where we're going. There it is. If you want to, you can Google it later, okay? But here's the thing. Why is that? Why is this an important next step? And I'll tell you why. This has come and a culmination of literally of years of seeking the Lord in prayer. And I believe God is in it. But what this represents for us is not really about the building. What it represents is a lifting of the lid on our capacity to grow. Okay? Right now, we have been here in this location now coming up on 5 years. But it's never good when the shoe can tell the foot how big it can grow. And this represents an opportunity for us to lift that lid and to be able to grow forward into next steps. It's really, really cool. But what's cool, even beyond that, is it doesn't represent just a place for us to gather on Sundays. We actually now have the ability on Tuesday nights to go in there in a midweek evening capacity to continue doing other areas of ministry, student ministry and kids ministry and a ministry to adults. It opens a new chapter in ways that we have never been able to step into before. It's really a massive answer to prayer. And of course, if you've been in that area off 6th Avenue, you know that there are just as many and plenty of places to serve the needs of downtown San Diego there as there are here. We've just been called out of our comfort zone in faith. It's going to be different. And it's going to be a move. But I got to tell you, I am freaking excited about it. And I'm emboldened, you guys. I'm emboldened. Here's why. Not because we have every detail figured out of all the different things that are going to come our way. I'm emboldened, you know why? Because Jesus said, come. Come. I really believe that the Lord is in it. And so we can take courage because he is here. And I, for one, I never set out in my life to be the person who would be sitting on the sidelines taking notes while everyone else plays the game. I want to be a life-changing, world-changing person who is activated in what God has called me to do. As far as I'm concerned, it's the only way to live. It's the only way to really follow Jesus. He didn't call us to sidelines living and viewing. He didn't call us to note-taking. He called us to passionate pursuit of him. He called us to barrel over the edge. He called us to walk into the middle of darkness and go be the light. He called us to step out in the middle of the storm, even when it's crazy and weird and scary sometimes, because he said, yep, I got it, I'm here. Made all that weather, not worried about it, come. So who's coming with me? What, yeah, right on. Who's willing to ask God, are you calling me out of my comfort zone? Let that one sit with you for a second. Here's number two. Step out in spite of the storm. Step out in spite of it. Verse 29 says, yes, come, Jesus said. So Peter went over the side of the boat and walked on the water toward Jesus. We just got to remember that this idea of the storm was a way bigger deal to Peter than it was to Jesus. We get this sense that Jesus is out there in the storm and his blood pressure is not even going up a point. Okay? And there is this radical kind of barreling over the side kind of attitude in Peter that we see in his life a bunch of other times that I just really, really dig. I dig that if Peter is going to make a mistake, it's going to be a hustle mistake. My high school baseball coach used to say, you know, you guys, mistakes are inevitable. Nobody's going to play perfect baseball, but you get to choose the kind of mistakes that you make. Make hustle mistakes. And what he meant by that is that if you're going to drop the ball diving for the ball. If you're going to strike out swinging, man. Don't just stand there and take it. If you're going to get thrown out at second, do it going in head first with your face in the dirt. Go for it hustling. If you're going to get scared in the storm, do it walking on the water. And here's the thing. If Peter was going to make a mistake, it's a hustle mistake. He wasn't going to be accused of shrinking back. He wasn't going to be accused of missing out. He went all in for Jesus, and then he's like, let Jesus sort it out later. And you know what? We're imperfect people. Jesus is always going to have to sort it out later, you guys. But if we make a mistake, let's go in hustling. Like, whoops-a-daisy. Sorry, Lord, you caught me sinking. I got scared there for a second. But I'm in the water, baby. You can almost feel like the condescension from the boat. Like, oh, Peter, man, what a loser. Peter, you should have sucked it up. You see it's Jesus there? All written by the dudes that are sitting shaking under their blanket in the boat. Peter was a hustler, and he made mistakes sometimes, but I believe that that's part of what God has called you and I to go all in. He's calling you to a generosity step. Let me just put a fine point on it. He's calling you to a selfless serving step. He's calling us as a church to new opportunities and new challenges, and he's looking for people who will go all in. He's looking for people who will go head first into second, face in the dirt, and then let Jesus sort it out. And that's going to mean stepping out in spite of the storm. That's going to mean taking a step in generosity before you win the lottery. Come on, somebody. That's going to mean it might mean you giving in a way that actually changes the way you live your everyday life. That's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. Peter was never the same, and neither will you. It might mean doing something more radical than you've ever done in your commitment to God, and that's okay. If you're walking into uncharted territory that you've never tried before, that's okay. Jesus does uncharted territory all the time. He doesn't make him nervous. Peter had never walked on water before. He had no frame of reference, no experience there. Here's what he had. What he had was a passionate, love him with all you got, radical abandon for Jesus. That's what he possessed. And you can almost see the half grin on the face of Jesus in the middle of the storm when he says, sure, come. It's almost like a dare. And here comes Peter, the bull in the china shop, going headfirst into second. That kind of love is what sent him barreling over the edge of the boat. That's the love that I believe God is saying, do you love me? Come jump in the water. Do you love me? Let's go all in. And you step out in spite of the storm. Here's number three. Get your eyes off your problem and on to Jesus. You got to get your eyes off your problem and on to Jesus. Verse 30, it says, but when he saw the strong wind and the waves, he was terrified and he began to sink. Can you relate? Save me, Lord, he shouted. That is such a godly prayer, by the way. I can't think of a more succinct prayer. Save me, Lord. And it says, immediately Jesus reached out and grabbed him. He said, you have so little faith, Jesus said. Why did you doubt me? It's almost like Jesus is saying, Peter, didn't you realize you were the safest person in the whole story? Yes, I'll save you. But you are getting closer to me. You're the safest dude out here because I am the way. I am the truth. I am the life. I'm the sure foundation. All these ways, they all roll at my command. And at the snap of my finger, I hush them all and tell them to be quiet. Just get your eyes off your problems and keep them fixed on me. And I'll be honest, that is a really difficult thing to do sometimes. I love the hustle of Peter. I love the barreling over the side, like just let's just jump in. Kind of decision-making that the guy possessed, and I've made a few of those kinds of leaps here and there. But I can also totally relate to this sinking feeling that sweeps over me when I have said yes, and then I kind of want to call a mulligan on that decision and retract. Like, wait a minute, whoa, there's storms out here. This is scary. Are there sharks out here? I don't swim very good. I don't see how this is going to work out. He was absolutely terrified. And if you've ever been there in that place, you're in pretty good company. You may want to step out maybe a little bit further in your relationship with God. But I got news for you. At some point, a big league leap in your faith, in your followership of Jesus, at some point it will scare your socks off. That's almost an indicator that you're doing it right. That's not in the Bible. I'm just saying. Like, if it doesn't actually scare you, you're probably feeling like you've got your hands pretty well gripping the steering wheel. It's when it's over your head. It's when it's too much for you to handle. It's when you can't see how it's all going to work out and you're in the middle of the storm that you need to rely on the guy that calls the waves up and down. And here's the thing, even as much as it may be scary, here's one of the things that I have learned in my life, and I humbly submit it to you. Don't let fear make your decisions for you. Do not let fear make your decisions for you. Peter's this guy, as flawed and as kind of rough and tumble as he is, there's something about his character and his heart that I believe Jesus really came to love and even admire in this man. There's a reason that Jesus called Peter the rock on which he would build his church. And it wasn't on any of the other note takers in the boat. It was on the dude that went barreling over the edge. The kingdom purposes that Jesus had in mind for his church would be built upon the life of an imperfect man who was unwilling to remain in the safety of the boat. And I don't think anything's changed in the way Jesus views faith. He's still building his church on the hearts of people who, imperfectly as they may execute it, go barreling over the side going, I'm just running to Jesus in the storm. I'm focusing on him because he's the peace speaker to all these waves. He is the one, he's my only hope. And so while I'm out of my comfort zone, I'm stepping into his wheelhouse. And that's what I'm about doing. Save me, Lord. And then what did Jesus immediately do? The scriptures say he reached out and he grabbed him immediately. And that's number four. Commit your life into the hands of God. That's what Peter did. The closer you get to Jesus, the safer you truly are. Look at verse 33 again, and it says, then the disciples worshiped him. You really are the Son of God, they exclaimed. Rick Warren said one time, you never know God is all you need until God's all you have. You can't really know God as the protector for your family until you have entrusted your family into the hands of God. You can't really know God as your financial provision until you have yielded your provision to God and then watched him come through time and time and time again. You can't experience what it is to have God go all out for you until you have gone all in with him. Because the way grace works is it's a free gift that must be received. So his love for you is radical abandon, but he doesn't come and shove it down your throat. For you to experience the magnanimous love of our great God in a personal way, I got to go all in with him. I don't go half in. I don't go like kind of teeter-tottering and try to get my toe barely in the water so that I can mostly remain out. For me to experience the all out of God's love for me, I got to go all in with him. But when you commit your life into the hands of God like that, incredible, incredible things happen. I want you to look at Chris and Lara's story.
I'm Chris, and this is my wife, Lara. We've been at Center Church for about 5 years, from when it started in the backyard, and we've had a lot of kids since then.
For me, kind of personally, being able to be at Center Church every week, getting into enter into worship and just be with a community of people that I kind of consider home has meant just so much. Being able to be around people who know me and I know them, and we share life together and the ups, the downs, all of it. I've met some really great new friends here that I just am so grateful to have in my life today because Center Church exists.
We've had lots of very defining moments at Center Church. I think the one that sticks out to me the most was probably 2 or 3 years ago. We were doing some prayer events, and we were back in a backyard in South Park doing a big prayer event. And we were kind of at a place career-wise where lots of things were up in the air, and we didn't really know what was going to happen and what we needed to do. And that event itself was actually a giant catalyst to me taking some pretty big steps and leaps of faith in starting a business and just kind of really relying on God financially to provide and to do some pretty big and amazing things.
The families that have found hope, the relationships that have been healed, the bonds that have been made, the people who have found Jesus, it's just the beginning. And so I think I'm in because I can't wait for the future, and I can't wait to see if this is the start, what's coming, and that's exciting to me.
The fruit of what we've seen as a church is worth the fear that I have of letting go of that financial resource. And so it's really, there's some reward. And I think sometimes we have this fear that if I give it up, then I'm not gonna, I lose from my bucket. And I'm not going to have enough. And I think what I've seen is that God has kind of twisted that a little bit and gone, it's not that you don't have enough, it's that I'm giving you something else. And that is worth the cost of admission.
I think in the area of generosity, always had a heart towards being generous, raising generous kids, and just that being a mark of who I am. And I think I'm being challenged to up the ante a little bit.
We give to Center Church because I believe very heavily in what Center Church is about. Mm-hmm. And I've seen the impact that the church as a community and the outreach and the things, the initiatives that we've had and we've done, I've seen the direct impact that it's had on personal friends and family and strangers. It's not about my return on the investment, it's about his return on the investment. And what does he get out of it? And I think what that is that there are other people who benefit more from the financial resources or from the time or anything that I invest there. They get more out of it than even I do. And so that's what ends up being worth it, is that you see the smiles, you see the hope, you see the restored marriages, you see the fixed finances, you see so many different aspects of people's lives that get changed, that the generosity that we bring to the table, I can't wait for God to continue to bless us financially so that we can do more and have more time and invest more back into kind of the kingdom stuff that he's doing through the church.
If I get to the end and people say I loved God well and I loved others well, then that's the end for me. That's the end game. That's the goal. And so if I can do a little bit today to move me closer to that goal, then great. And that looks like being in and generous and committed to God's call on our family and on Center Church.
When I look at like this campaign and I look at what the initiative and what we're going after, it excites me a lot. Because I can't wait to see the impact that it has and the countless thousands upon thousands upon thousands of lives that the itty-bitty little commitment that we're making in this campaign is going to have, the fruit that's going to have. What do you have to lose? What's the alternative? What's the better option? That you continue to do life alone and don't have friends who are going to push you to be better? That you don't see the financial repair in your life that God has in store for you? What do you have to lose?
What do you have to lose? So yes, it's out of the water. Yes, it's out into the storm. Yes, it's over the side of the boat, but the safest guy in the story was the guy who stumbled even a little bit in his faith, but stumbled closer to Jesus. I want to leave you with this truth. If you want to walk on water, you have to get out of the boat. You want to walk on water, you got to get out of the boat. Everybody else is just taking notes. Everybody else might be choosing the comfortable path, but what are you going to do? Philippians 3, 12, and 13 is kind of the theme of our entire series. In the Voice translation, it says, Paul writes this, he says, I'm not there yet, nor have I become perfect, but I am charging on to gain everything or anything and everything the anointed one Jesus has in store for me. I'm going over the edge of the boat, and nothing will stand in my way. Because he has grabbed me and won't let me go. Save me, Lord. But brothers and sisters, as I said, I know I have not arrived, but there's one thing I am doing. Look at this. He says, I'm leaving my old life behind, putting everything on the line for this mission. I believe God's calling you to leave your old life behind and put everything on the line for the mission. So don't miss out. Go all in. And I want to challenge you in particular over the next 4 weeks. Would you begin to pray and ask God what he might be calling you to do outside of your comfort zone? Those resources are there for you to contemplate and pray. I would encourage you to really kind of make that even like a prayer journal for the next month or so. because God's calling us all for one out into the water, into an uncharted season, but a place where he already is. And I believe, you guys, listen to me, our greatest days are ahead of us. There is way more. But I'm really challenged by Chris's question there at the end of that video. What do you have to lose? The answer is nothing. Would you bow your heads and pray with me? Lord, we come to you today with hearts all over the place. We're in lots of different places. There's some folks in here today, Lord, are still kind of kicking the tires and not sure where they stand with you. I pray that today they would sense your presence, that they would know your closeness and nearness to them and be touched by your love. And some of us here today, Lord, I believe are beginning to wrestle with a real challenge. Maybe listening to your prompting and to your voice to go really all in our relationship with you. And I pray that you would give us, Lord, the faith of a guy like Peter, as imperfect as he is, to call out to you. Is it you, Lord? And if it is, I'm coming over the side. And I pray that you would meet us there at that point of faith. And that even as we trust in you to sort it all out, because we don't have control of the wind, the waves, all we can control is our decision to pursue you. And so today, I pray that the hearts of faith would begin to rise up, stir up, Lord, in our heart, a passion for who you are, so that Lord, our pursuit of you can be true. We run to you today. And so I pray for my friends, as we go through this process over the next month or so, would you speak to us and then give us the faith to say yes, in Jesus' name, amen.